Hello and welcome to a special ICAW Insights in Focus podcast, exploring the role that board members should play in getting executive pay right. I'm Peter van Veen, the Director of Corporate Governance and Stewardship at the Institute. So in this episode, we will focus on some of the latest trends and provide some practical advice on how to navigate a thorny and often contentious topic, but one that's a crucial part of managing an organization successfully in the long term. And I have with me here a great panel to explore this. I'd like to introduce to you Sandy Pepper, Emeritus Professor of Management Practice at the London School of Economics and Political Science, and the author of a recent book, If You Are So Ethical, Why Are You So Highly Paid? I also have with me George Yendall, FCA, Non-Exec Director at Lion Trust Asset Management PLC, and Chair of the Remuneration Committee. And finally, Luke Hildyard, Director at the High Pay Centre, a think tank focused on pay and governance. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
So let's start with something that's being discussed more and more in the world of executive pay, whether ESG metrics should be used to measure executives' performance. So PwC analysis shows that in 2021, nearly two-thirds of FTSE 100 companies used ESG-related measures to assess the performance of their executives. As this trend spreads to FTSE 250 and beyond, Sandy, I really wanted to start asking you the question, is this a good idea? Should companies be using ESG metrics to assess the performance of their execs?
So, Peter, I'm actually a bit of a cynic on this topic. Executive pay goes in fashions. When I started my career back in 1980, executives were paid a salary and had a pension. And then we had share options. Then we had long-term incentive plans with ever more complex metrics attaching to them, typically financial metrics. At times, people tried to introduce other metrics to do with staff satisfaction or customer satisfaction. But these things were always difficult to do because it was difficult to get really good, accurate measurements. And I think this is the problem with ESG. There is a huge ongoing and very volatile debate about what actually constitutes a good ESG metric. It's a slightly complex combination of different things anyway, environment, social and governance. These are sort of three things that don't necessarily sit very happily together. So I am dubious about attaching ESG metrics to long-term incentives. I can see that it might be possible to attach them to short-term incentives where measurement might be a little bit easier. I guess, my favoured my favoured approach would be to think about this more in the round when you're assessing somebody's performance rather than trying to tie a particular part of their reward to a particular metric.
From a practical perspective as a chair of REMCO, I mean, I agree with you about the difficulty around measurement, of course, and the plethora of different potential measures there are here. We also, within my organisation, had a discussion around whether ESG metrics sit best in long-term incentive plans or short-term. Partly because of the problem of the longer you're trying to measure something further out, the lack of consistent metrics makes more issue. And partly because I passionately believe that, I mean, I think this is important, and we've actually always thought about not just the what, but the how we get there as well. Then I think if a proportion of annual bonuses assessed according to, call them ESG, and I gather that comes, we'll come back to this, I'm sure, a wide range of issues. But if that sits in the short-term bonus plan, then that allows the organization to incrementally improve that performance year on year on year. And I think the big changes that we're going to make and help drive will become through incremental improvement and building on things year by year.
And what's the risk? I mean, just falling into that, because ESG metrics, there's a lot of debate around how accurate they are and whether companies are gaming them to get a favorable kind of rating with investment companies. And isn't just another incentive to try and game your ESG metrics if your executive pay is attached to them?
As we said, there is no single ESG metric. So I think you have to start by saying, where do you think you want to sit between what we used to call the hard financial metrics within an annual bonus and, inverted commas, the softer metrics which might fit within ESG? I mean, we've been doing this, I say, for years. People used to have, you know, personal performance and risk as metrics, and, you know, the investor community tended to say, well, funny enough, executives always used to score quite highly in those. So there was a degree of cynicism about that. Now, I think, from my perspective, I think ESG does now give us a good framework on which we need to start, or which we can hang around some objectives here, which we can build on. But I think they do need, at the start, to be quite specifically targeted towards the business and the state and the cycle of the business that you're in, and should only represent, well, in our company, it's 70-30, 70 more financial metrics, 30 ESG. So I think that's the weighting we've gone for. But, and then I think you need to drive underneath the strategy, what the business is trying to do, the behaviours it's trying to look at. And as Sandy says, you know, setting metrics around the environment is very different from setting metrics around governments.
I think the question is, to some extent, about the value of performance-related pay and the existing executive pay practices more generally, because with financial metrics, if you've got an element of pay that's tied to the share price or to the profitability of the company, there are ways that executives can take decisions that will benefit those metrics in the short term and thus lead to enhanced payouts for them, but might not necessarily be in the interests of the company over the long term. Similarly, financial reporting can be manipulated. So obviously there are questions about, you know, whether ESG targets can be gamed, whether sort of a high ESG score is necessarily reflective of a good outcome for all stakeholders. There was a company in the extractive industries a few years ago where there was a huge controversy because they did score very well on the operational performance. I think they have a very greatly improved health and safety record in a year that was awful for the shareholders in terms of the profits and the shareholder returns. So the question, in a way, I think, is obviously companies should be looking at their social and environmental impact as a way of assessing the company performance and the individual executive's performance, but whether they should be tying that to the CEO's pay is a different question. But equally, we could be saying, should CEOs have their pay packages formed of all, you know, the multiple targets, different components, all incredibly complex, that nobody really knows what it's going to spit out in 1 or 3 years' time. Would it not be better sort of simplifying the pay package with, say, a restricted share award, and then just assessing the individual performance environmentally, socially, financially?
And this is kind of where my sympathy lies. I mean, I wouldn't wish anybody to misunderstand my first comment. I don't think ESG metrics are not important, in the sense that I think ESG is incredibly important. But I think the problem that we have is accurate measurement, having accurate measures of these different
But Sandy, surely each individual company and each individual chair of the remuneration committee, in consideration with the board, we know what we're trying to achieve as a company. We want to link pay to helping part of to achieve those objectives. Those clearly will be different from company to company. But if we're explicit about those, and by the way, companies are explicit. They should be more so in relation to explaining the outcome in the annual remuneration report as and be more robust about where they've come to those decisions and how and why they've come to those decisions. But building on those as a starting block and continue to build on those and starting to change behaviours, and it pay doesn't rule this, but it's one component of it.
Are ESG metrics being more used as a hygiene factor, i.e. if you get it wrong, we might not pay some of your bonus, but if, as long as you're not getting it wrong, we will focus on the financial performance? Is that more balanced way of looking at it?
I think so, yes. But I mean, I go back to what Sandy said. I mean, we know we can't measure everything here. And in the same way, you know, we can't even get an agreement on what an adjusted profit measure might be. But when we're looking at or EPS measures, for example, in more traditional, right? So, but I think it's to walk away from what this means across the organization, to be transparent about it, to actually to engage with your workforce about what this means. One of the things I do is I sit and meet the Workforce Advisory Council every year to talk about executive pay. So this is not just to do with, you know, with the output for the executive directors, but it is something that, you know, that cuts further across the business.
Whether it's with a this is a genuine question because I'm really interested to know whether it's with like an adjusted profit metric or say the health and safety record or the carbon footprint. Do you think that if you have a metric in the plan, the CEO works harder towards that objective than if they didn't have it there? Or is it something, a kind of a statement to shareholders and to other stakeholders saying this is what we as an organisation value and sort of, I don't know, sort of focuses the culture of the organisation a little differently perhaps?
Well, I'm not a psychological expert or all the rest of it about behaviours, but and absolutely, you know, if this was all about, you know, changing behaviours, or I think somebody used the word gaming the system here, you know, clearly, you know, if you want to increase the, you know, the number of the diversity on your board, then, you know, it wouldn't be difficult to do that to game the system. So it has to mean something further on down and through the organisation, be part of what, you know, the board and supporting the strategy that we're trying to achieve. But, you know, do I think that and in my experience, you know, does the executive director behavior, is it in some part not driven, but is it, you know, do they take account of some of those things? Yes, if we've chosen the right metrics that are important for the business, then absolutely it will subtly change behaviors, I think.
And the role of investors in this, because I think Luke's question kind of comes to the core of that. I mean, how much of this ESG metric as a measure in terms of influencing exec pay, how much is that driven by the investors? And are the investors really, what they're looking for is a signal back from management or the execs, if you like, to say, yes, we think this is really important and we'll work on it and we're happy to have our pay tied to progress on some of those metrics like diversity, for example?
Well, I think from the investor community, I think that's a very interesting question because, you know, undoubtedly there's pressures on chairs of remuneration committees to make the short-term bonus payments and metrics as hard and measurable and financially driven as you possibly can. But they are, you know, they find themselves in a slight dilemma because clearly, you know, doing things the right way and across the ESG space is certainly becoming more important. So that's why I think when we come back to deciding what, in discussion with our investors, because we do, of course, go out to talk to our investors before we put new remuneration policies and plans in place, you know, deciding what the appropriate balance between short term, long term, between financial metrics and ESG metrics should be. Then once we've got within that balance, I think it is then down to the individual company, the chair of remuneration committee, the board, to work out and set what is the most important things which apply to the growth and development of that company across those three metrics.
So I'm quite taken with Luke's comment about complexity. And George said something about the psychology here. So I think there is a discount for complexity. That is to say, I think executives discount the value of their reward plans for the level of complexity that they involve. The more difficult something is to understand, there's lots of empirical evidence shows that you discount the value of it. I would rather have these measures on the way in rather than on the outputs. And my belief about what's kind of gone awry with executive pay over the last 30 years is we've put all this complexity about business management. We've kind of tried to design it into our reward plans. actually, I think people are better than that in the main. I think executives, most of them, want to do the right thing from time to time, and they don't necessarily need to have it kind of programmed in as an algorithm to their remuneration arrangements.
But Sandy, don't you think these discussions aren't already happening on the way in? I mean, these objectives are not set in isolation behind closed doors. They're set as part of a discussion about where the business wants to go, the role of the executives, and as part of their own appraisal system.
I'm not saying they don't. And again, don't misunderstand me. But I just think actually that's the critical thing that affects behaviour. It's the discussions that take place at the beginning.
And the discounting point is important in another way as well, because if the complexity results in the value being discounted, it means more complex CEO pay packages need to be bigger to be as, you know, to have the kind of same value as the simpler ones, if you see what I mean. And as the CEOs perceive them as being more conditional, less likely to pay out, the potential value has to increase, and you see the CEO pay go up with all the contentiousness and controversies that causes. And of course, it means that the business is having to spend more on top earners than would previously be the case. And I think that the evidence shows that it's as these long-term incentive plans, which tend to be more complex, subject to more performance conditions, have come in, that's what's really set sort of CEO pay running away from the pay of the wider workforce.
Well, I don't disagree with what you say, but I think, as you said at the end there, that is a far greater risk associated with more complex plans driven out over longer time periods. The other thing that's critically important for me as chair of the Remuneration Committee, of course, is this does not exist within the executive directors alone. You know, we now have oversight of senior management pay, oversight of pay across the organisation as a whole. So you know, doing it the right way, thinking about what those ESG metrics might mean for managers hiring more diversely or whatever else it might be, and building in and aligning the performance appraisals and the bonus discussions down the business together with the executive directors is an important point for me.
So actually there's quite a lot of agreement around the table here. I think we're agreeing that actually keep ESG metrics out of long-term incentives for all sorts of reasons that we've talked about. So if you're going to have them, focus them, build them into your short-term incentives, your annual bonus plans. I think, George, you're entirely agreeing. It's part of the performance discussion that takes place at the beginning of the year as well as the end of the year. It's just a question of whether the metrics are yet robust enough to make your annual bonus plans, to give them validity.
On the metrics point and ESG, is it something really meaningful or a fad? The complexity of ESG metrics doesn't mean we should just ignore that. The fact that it's so difficult to get a kind of consistent, comparable, accurate way of assessing a company's social and environmental impact means that boards, investors, policymakers should be thinking more about it because it's incredibly important.
And of course, if ESG metrics, have that impact on the bottom line and have that impact on the profitability of the company through customers either getting turned off, or then it should be filtered through your performance and therefore your remuneration that way as well, be it in the short term or the long term.
I don't think any business can feel comfortable that their long-term success, if they're not doing it the right way, then that will have an impact on their long-term success. I mean, I totally agree with what Luke said here, that you know, and by the way, dare I say it, I'm bound to say it, you know, you have to put an element of trust in the chairs of the remuneration committees and the boards to make these robust assessments correctly, where you can't automatically point to some external number to try and measure it. And I come back to what I said right at the start. This is evolving. I don't think it's going away. I think it's evolving. We're all chairs of remuneration committees are grappling with this. And I come back to the point I made, which is, listen, you know, if we set the things the right for business, build on them consistently year on year on year, more stretching targets each year, then we will see improvement. And what we want to avoid, of course, and this again comes back to chairs of remuneration committees, not saying, oh, well, you know, we ticked three boxes last year, easy ones, let's tick three different boxes next year. This has to be part of something that grows year on year.
Complexity also then prevents transparency and clarity for people analysing why you're paid what you're paid and so forth, because it becomes quite hard to unpick. I think that's one aspect. The other aspect is very much about shareholders versus stakeholders and the short-term versus the long-term kind of debate around, you know, incentivizing execs for the long-term sustainable, profitable growth of the business, which is a perennial debate, and it's not nothing new. I think that debate's been around a long time, but you've seen a few CEOs take the fairly, I guess, with the support of their boards, I suppose, brave move, like Paul Polman at Unilever, to say, I'm not going to do quarterly figures. We're not going to do quarterly reporting. We're only going to do annual reporting, and you'll have to just assess us on the annual results because that's what you're going to get. Is there more of a trend to that?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I think I don't know that there's a trend. I think this is a very live debate. One of the responses to Unilever most recently comes from Terry Smith, another famous fund manager, who basically says this is all a load of baloney. You know, it's being used by companies like Unilever to disguise poor financial performance. Right. Kind of, where's the money? Now, I'm certainly not advocating that point of view, and I'm much more attracted to the kind of view that George has just been describing. But I think this is a very live discussion at the moment, and if you've got a different group of people in the room, you might get some very different views about the rights and wrongs of it.
So one of the things that I've picked up in the media is that in a number of cases where exec pay has been the headline, is that the role of the Remco is front and center. And in some cases, quite explicitly, they're being singled out for not doing their job correctly. So really the question I'd like to start with you, George, is how difficult a balancing act is this for the Remco, and how much pressure are you under to try and get this right, and how do you do your job?
Well, I mean, obviously we're under considerable pressure and spotlight. I mean, there is a history maybe of too often of Remco's not getting this right. Clearly, that gets more difficult when you look at incentive plans that span years, and we were talking about that earlier in terms of, you know, getting some unforeseen outcomes, good or bad, maybe. I mean, I would answer that by saying, listen, it's time to stand up as remuneration committee chairs now. You know, every plan that we put in place will have an overriding discretion by the committee to look at the outcomes. And, you know, we need to man up and we need to make sure we use that discretion, you know, to get and to help get the right answers, even if that might be unpopular with management, and not just, as I think external view would say, oh my gosh, every time Remco uses discretion, it's to up the pay.
And Luke, what are your thoughts on this in terms of the core role of the Remco in this debate?
Can I bring it back to the question of the problem? Sorry,
sure.
if that's because I think it's an interesting one. There are examples of where the Remco gets it wrong. It has really dire consequences for the business. or brings about great disruption and upheaval. The obvious example is Persimmon, the house building company, where they set a very generous pay award that didn't account for the effects that external things, specifically the Help to Buy scheme, could have on the housing market. And the CEO got paid, I think, close to, if not over, £100 million for basically being in the right place at the right time. And that sort of devoured the company's attention. It was obviously a source of huge controversy. The CEO eventually wound up resigning after an interview where he was supposed to be talking about housing developments, but just ended up being constantly asked about his obscene pay levels. But I think that's a rare case. That was sort of so egregious and so badly wrong that, you know, that heads had to roll, as it were. But I think in general, part of the problem is that the Remcos collectively often deliver outcomes that are bad for society because they're all competing with each other, bidding up pay to outbid their rivals to get better people into the, or as perceived better people into the top positions, which means companies are spending more on a tiny number of people at the top. The so-called 1% are grasping a bigger and bigger share of total incomes, leaving less for everybody else and the gaps widening up. But that doesn't actually necessarily factor into business performance. And of course, I don't think Remco's people like George should be sitting there thinking, how do we solve societal inequality? Of course, they've got to be thinking about what do we do that's best for the business. So I think there's a sort of mismatch, an externality, if you will, in terms of inequality that arises from the Remco's decisions. And I think it does show, again, the importance of understanding a business's and business collectively's social impact as well as its financial performance.
I think I'd like finally kind of just finish up with a couple of questions around just the international perspective, because we clearly see a very different approach to this in the United States, in the UK and mainland Europe. And I'm wondering, because the UK is literally between those two, I guess they're quite different in their approach to executive pay and the use of non-financial measures or short-term versus long-term measures. The US seems to be particularly an example of where a CEO can get paid a multiple of the employee's salary that is so much higher than in the UK. In fact, there is a very high-profile court case at the moment in the US on Tesla and the package that Elon Musk got out of Tesla, which is in the billions, which seems inconceivable in a UK context. And in Europe, there is a very different approach to exec pay, which is much more in line with perhaps the salary progression through the ranks up to the senior leadership post. Look, just from your perspective, are we seeing any movement in that? Are we moving more towards the US model? Are we developing our own model in the UK, or are we moving more towards a continental European model of exec pay?
Well, I think certainly in terms of the amounts that CEOs are paid, the UK tends to be a bit higher than the rest of Europe, but much closer to Europe than to Elon Musk levels of pay in America. And I think that's probably a good thing. Some people would say that the American economy is more dynamic as a result of its more sort of winner-takes-all culture. But that, you know, that's maybe in aggregate, but the level of inequality in America means that some people have very hard lives indeed. So I think the approach in Europe where pay is seen more in the context of wider society is probably a little bit healthier. There was some interesting research that showed that the higher a proportion of a firm's ownership that's US-based, US fund managers and so on, the higher the executive pay and the more likely it is to follow an American-style structure with very high levels of reward for the top executives. And the proportion of UK PLC that is US-owned is gradually increasing. So perhaps we will start to go more in that direction. I would hope not.
I would just make 2 points. I think one is that I take the international aspects here of pay. Don't forget the impact of pay competition in the private equity space here. That's, you know, that is as much a comparator for people within this country as overseas. Beyond that, I absolutely passionately believe that that those companies that are going to be successful in the longer term will be doing it the right way and not just focused on generating profit and big payouts for senior executives. So I do believe that therefore we should continue, and we get better at putting those, call them ESG metrics for shorthand, but doing it the right way, getting that into the culture of the way in which we do business in this country.
And my view is that the UK, as in so many other things, when it comes to pay and the way we do business, is we don't quite know whether we want to be like the Americans or like the Europeans. I certainly hope, George, that you're right and that our leanings are more to the European end than the American end. But I think we as a nation have still got some hard thinking to do about that.
Listen, Sandy, I don't have a problem with people being well paid for success the right way, so long as that's spread throughout the organisation.
Yeah, I think we'll probably all violently agree on that point.
And I think on that note, we can conclude and wrap up. Thank you very much, Luke Hiljard, George Endel, and Professor Sandy Pepper for your insights. I think we've done a whirlwind tour through what is a very complex topic of executive pay, ESG metrics being put into that mix, as well as short-term versus long-term, and the international perspective of the pool of the US-type incentive model and the European on the UK. That's all from the ICAW for today. I'm Peter Van Veen. Thank you for listening. And if you want more informed debate on business, economics, and the development of the profession, please don't forget to subscribe to ICAW Insights wherever you get your podcasts.